welcome to another episode of Behind the Sport. And coming off a weekend where I spent it down at Wanneroo Raceway volunteering with the officials there to see how their life is, and fantastic opportunity that, you know, obviously I was able to enjoy and learn from. And stay tuned to BehindTheSport.net, which has just had another refresh. I think that's about a 3 millionth redo. But stay tuned to BehindTheSport.net. There's going to be a bit of a video coming up, and you'll be able to see what it got up to, including cleaning up an oil spill all the way from the pit exit all the way back to pit entry. Although luckily I only had to do part of that. The rest of the team that was there pretty much looked after most of the rest of the track. Now, turning to this week's guest, staying on the commentator tip, we had Chris Mitchell on last episode, and this week got another of the commentator variety, and we've got Sean McCabe. How are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you, Shane. It's interesting to hear you speak about your adventures up there at Wanneroo Raceway. I can imagine you would have been amongst friends up there. They would have been rubbing their hands together having you up there, would they?
I think they were hoping to put me through some more stuff.
But, I reckon they'll get their opportunity one day.
Yeah, look, I think, to be honest, I think I'm probably going to go back again and do it again. Like, it was such an awesome opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was weird, you know, not having my camera and, you know, the team with me to, you know, document, you know, what we'd be usually doing. We did have one camera up there for a little while, just to sort of, you know, so we could put a bit of a piece together.
Yep.
But yeah, no camera in my hand, so that was weird.
Now, we noticed that. In actual fact, you're really working one arm there for the day. I noticed you said that there was an oil spill that ran approximately 2 kilometres of the track, and that you helped to clean it up. Well, on the vision, you sort of do one-handed for about a metre and a half of
it
the 2 kilometres of
track.
It
wasn't just stage for the camera. I was actually out there for a while before the camera wrapped
up. Yes. Oh, that's not what I've heard, actually.
Yeah, well, I don't care who you've been speaking to. They're full of crap. But look, this episode's about you, not about me.
Oh, okay.
I tend to say that actually a lot on these things. You know, somehow it always ends up turning around to be a little bit about me. But commentator up at Perth Motorplex. That's where I've met you.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
But I believe you've got a bit more of a history than that. So let's get right into it. So, tell me, how did you find out your love for motorsport?
Well, that's tell you what, I'm glad we've got a bit of time up our sleeves. That it's a really long one. Basically, I guess I grew up playing ball sports, like water polo was my summer sport and football was my winter sport. But I always loved car racing and motorbike racing. Whenever I saw it on TV or I was lucky enough to go to Speedway, Dad would take us to Speedway, my brother and I, on Friday nights, and we'd be at we'd be at the drag racing down there at Ravenswood on Saturday night, and occasionally on a Sunday afternoon we'd be at Wanneroo Raceway. So we're always involved in that. If it wasn't football or our sports that we did, we're at the racetrack. And I just had this thing. I just loved the sounds and experiences of being at the track for motorsport. And I guess I come from a spectator's point of view in that I'm not a racer. I haven't raced. I grew up not having the budget. I also, my occupation, I'm a welder by trade. So when I left school, it was all about buying a car, then buying a house. And I just got focused in that. And I racing just wasn't part of my life, unfortunately, although it was one of those things I always wanted to do. I remember getting up to Dad and saying, "Look, Dad, I want to do go-karting when I get older." And he said, "Oh, yeah, no worries, son. You know, as soon as you finish your apprenticeship and you can afford to buy everything for yourself, you can do what you want, son, you know?"
And I was like, no banker mum or dad available.
No, that's right. No, unfortunately not. And, you know, it was kind of disappointing. I guess that was one thing I really wanted to do more than anything. You know, I used to run around kicking a footy and playing water polo, but I guess with my physique, I probably wasn't suited to those sorts of sports. I just absolutely love motorsport. It's something you just can't describe. I guess it's the smells as part of it. And also, I guess just growing up and loving cars, just as a kid looking at cars and seeing your parents' cars and your friends', your friends' parents, all different cars. cars and just thinking, wow, that's great. And just wanting, I like cars when they're stationary, but I prefer them when they're moving. And when they're moving, they should be racing. And I think that's what cars were designed to do. Sure, it was transport, but to me, cars and bikes were designed for racing.
Now, anyone that knows you would probably be a bit surprised to hear about water polo was
yes,
something you had...
Yes, especially if they look at my physique.
Well, look, I wasn't referring to the physique as being the reason why they'd probably be shocked, but that's so far away from motorsport.
It is indeed, yeah.
What got you into water polo? I have to ask.
Yeah, well, I guess, okay, well, basically, always loved swimming as a kid. My brother and I were swimmers. We were swimming pool swimmers. We didn't live by the ocean, unfortunately, but we just loved our swimming. And I actually had knee injuries when I was a young lad. I think I had my first knee operation at the age of 12, would you believe? Nice. I think it was 12, maybe 13. I think it was 12 thereabouts. And the doctor said to me, they said, look, football's not going to be your future. Swimming is. And I was part of the Victoria Park Swimming Club, and they used to train at Somerset Street Pool, and there was a water polo club there called Kalamunda Water Polo Club, which eventually became Somerset Water Polo Club. And I went along as a strong swimmer, joined them, found out I was a big kid for my age and a big young person for my age. So water polo is a lot about fast swimming, but it's also about a lot of strength in the water. And I guess I was just one of those water babies who just grew up in the pool, I guess. My brother was the runner, I was the swimmer, and water polo was something that was huge, and I just became very good at it. Well, say, I take that back, I became okay at it. Made the state under 18 squad when I was 17 years of age. Travelled to Tasmania with the team. That was the pinnacle of my career, that's for sure. That was a special experience.
How'd you guys go over there?
Well, actually, WA won the championships on that particular year. I think it was 1982-83. We won the championships.
Just giving you your age here.
Yes, I know. I realised that. I was trying not to. And that was...
I won't tell you how old I was then.
No, you probably weren't even born. But that was going back... You wanted two beers, was it?
Or
was
two beers, yeah.
It was one of those signs. We beat New South Wales in the final. That was in Tasmania. So travelling to Tasmania with the team was something special. But in the back of my mind, I always loved motorsport, and when I eventually bought my house or effectively owned my house, I did want to get into motorsport. Then I'd probably left my run a little bit late, but just always, if there was ever Formula One or anything on television, I'd always watch it, no matter how late at night, no matter how early I had to get up the next day to go to work. It was always about the motorsport. I just loved it. It's hard to explain.
One thing before we get onto motorsport,
yes,
again. I've got to ask, is water polo as vicious as some people say it is?
Look, it pretty much is, yes, indeed.
Is there some biting and pulling your swimsuits?
Well, no, not so much the biting.
Okay, so the biting is probably more Hollywood?
No, yeah, exactly. Pretty much a lot of elbowing, punching, kicking, holding people underwater and laying in with the boots. It's been described as a cross between soccer, soccer, rugby in a swimming pool. Yeah. And that's kind of a good way of describing it. But yeah, it is and theoretically, water polo is a non-contact sport.
Well, that's what
theoretically.
I've seen obviously some videos where it shows that it's definitely not.
Absolutely, but, yeah. And it's like a duck that's, it might look all nice and peaceful on the surface, but what's going on underneath the surface is pretty full on.
Yeah, right.
And probably a sport that actually suited me, I guess, one of those people who is a very placid person, but had a little bit of white line fever once across the white line, or dive into a water polo pool and started to get a little, started to equal things up a little bit. Yeah, so placid outside of the pool and the opposite inside the pool.
So you spent your time growing up around the various tracks in WA, and obviously Wanneroo Raceway, Claremont Speedway, and Ravenswood Raceway. And of course those two which later merged to become the Perth Motorplex. But what were some of your fondest memories? Let's go to Ravenswood first. What were some of your fondest memories of Ravenswood as a spectator?
Yeah, indeed. And that's where I come from as a spectator. Probably there's a couple. One was, I remember being with Dad. Mum was at home because it was a long way to drive to, because we lived in Victoria Park. So it was a long way to go to Ravenswood, but well worth the journey. And I think, I guess, some aspects of Ravenswood were annoying and the viewing wasn't terrific. You don't have the sort of banked amphitheatre that the Perth Motorplex has. So viewing was a bit tough. And it was a long journey there. It was a long journey home. I think just one of the memories of being with my brother and my dad was just really special. I still remember like looking down at dad because my brother and I grew taller than our father. And, you know, I think it was just part of that. And dad had mates from work who used to go to the drags also and Speedway. But as far as specific memories of specific races, not really. No, I just, I guess I just loved it all. And then later on when we didn't go with Dad, used to go with mates, and it was a full day's journey down there and back. But it's funny how now being in commentary, I start to remember some of the names and not so much the faces, because most of the racers wear helmets. And if they don't, well, you don't race. So so many of the names, you know, like the Milosevic, for instance, Treasure, Board, Brown. There's so many really good names, and even like you know, Corey Marriott, for instance. I do remember his dad, Michael. I think it was Michael going back in the day, but I remember the name. And but yeah, for me, it was just purely as a spectator. And remember, I always said I was a bit of a shy sort of a person, but sort of just stayed away. But just really enjoyed that aspect of Ravenswood. And you just couldn't believe how fast and how loud these cars were. You know, you're sort of used to cars up and down the streets, and then once you go to the drags, it's like, wow, man, this is loud.
Yeah.
And bring it on. Let's turn up the volume. Come on, Dad, make some modifications to your car on the way home, you know.
Do the old screwdriver through the exhaust trick.
Exactly.
And the muffler.
That's right, the old Toyota Land Cruiser. But, yeah, just, yeah, can't speak highly enough of Ravenswood. But the venue we have today, obviously, is richly deserved.
Now, I'd say probably the theme would continue, you know, Claremont Raceway.
Exactly.
It'd be more about the people and the...
It certainly was. Yeah. It was the same again. I think from memory, we either used to go there with... I don't think Mum used to go. I think it was mainly just my dad and my brother would go along. And I think we used to take Dad's old HT utility, his work ute. So just the three of us across the bench seat at the front. And he used to park it somewhere around there, Claremont, and going there. But it was there again, real nighttime sport. And I guess, you know, going back, and if you realise how old I actually am, you realise going back, I go back to the days when they used to turn the streetlights off at midnight. So I remember that happening. So when you're to go to, say, Claremont Speedway, for instance, and there's racing under lights at night, it's like, wow. I mean, football wasn't played under lights at night back then. Cricket wasn't. But we had motorsport and speedway, and it was super spectacular. I guess one of the things, you know, getting the dirt in your eyes and that sort of stuff used to annoy you a little bit. And but the characters were involved back then. And, you know, just remember, well, sort of forgotten a lot of the names, but remember the names like Priolo. Just so many of the old-fashioned names I remember. And, of course, the voice of Speedway was Con Migro. And he would, I guess what I'm saying is, if you're at the track at Claremont Speedway, you could close your eyes or turn your back to the track and just listen to Con, and you would visualise the racing through Con Migro's voice. I guess that's another thing that really sticks in my mind about Speedway in particular, not only being at night, but the voice of Con Migro.
Yeah. I think for anyone that went to Claremont, you know, no matter what year it was, Con was always, the voice of Speedway.
It certainly was.
And then even, you know, obviously went across the Perth Motorplex, and of course he retired last season before, because it's just finished the last season. So,
yes. Yep.
You know, and you hate to always put it on people, but you hate to say, you know, like, there's some big shoes to fill.
Oh, yes.
Because, you know, especially in commentary, everyone has their own style and that. But to bring that same emotion and passion that Con had.
Yes.
You know, well, I should say has, because, you know, he's definitely not in the past.
No way.
You know, that Con has around Speedway. something hard to beat. And even the promos and everything for Speedway was, you know, always con and always, you know, the old Friday night is Speedway night.
Absolutely.
You know, you'd hear that, you'd hear the start of the ad and you'd just be waiting for it at the end, you know.
You'll be there.
Yep.
It's just the most classic war cry, I guess you could call it. I think Con did a massive amount for not only motorsport but especially Speedway here in Western Australia over the 60-odd years he was involved with it. I guess, you know, that's another one of the reasons I wanted to get into commentating was Con Migro. But, yeah, what a legend of the sport. And talk about stood the test of time, he certainly has. And the other thing is there's some great young commentators coming along at the moment for Speedway and drag racing, and they're setting the world alight. But you're right, they've got massive shoes to fill when they get us sit in the seat there of Con Migro, the commentary box at Speedway.
The circuit racing, which I see you up at Wanneroo.
Yes.
You know, every race meet almost. And
yes.
Just sort of usually in turn one, just sort of taking it all in down there. Any fond memories from up at Wanneroo?
Yes, many, many. And there again, go back with Dad and my brother. So many. And I go back to before they redesigned the track with the infill pits, which has been okay, but in actual fact, in my opinion, it's ruined what was a good amphitheatre before they built the infield pit complex. But nonetheless, going back to that, my memories of that are basically a lot of the older cars, and I guess I'm talking about the historics, and also a phase I really enjoyed was when they had the Ford Sierras.
Yep.
Dick Johnson and John Bowne, the Ford Sierras. I guess what makes them stick in my mind more than any others, I'm not really sure. I guess it was just they were a short, stubby little car with a small engine but extremely loud. And, of course, that's just, you know, your supercars or Australian touring cars as it was. Then there was also your monthly race meetings and getting to see a lot of the not only the historic cars but the vintage cars, for instance, that will come out, you know, vintage racing occasionally up there. It's just magnificent to see the sort of vehicles you would expect to see in a museum actually out there in the racetrack rotating, doing what they were designed to do and what they still do. I remember being in the hail there at Wanneroo Raceway. I remember seeing, believe it or not, and the late Rob Janney, I spoke about this with him, is that I remember seeing an aeroplane land on the pit straight at Wanneroo Raceway at a lunch break at a typical monthly race meeting. This is going back to possibly the 90s. I'm not sure if it was the 80s, late 80s, but definitely in the 90s. And it was like a single engine aircraft, like a Cessna, for instance. And it literally landed on the straight there. Was the old pit straight there. I forgot the sponsor name at the time. And then the bloke went inside, turned the engine off, went inside. They all sort of knew him. He turned around, and 20 minutes later, he took off on the pit straight. It's one of those things you got to see. I also got to see John Zappia do some hot laps in his top door slammer around Wanneroo Raceway.
Yeah, wow.
Exactly, and that was in 2000.
They're not built to turn.
No, indeed, but this was 2010, and it was the HQ Nationals.
Yeah.
Now, how appropriate is that to have the fastest HQ in the world, John Zappia's, the GTS Monaro, actually doing laps of Barbagallo. And he also did a couple of burnouts down the main straight. But, I was there the day the fastest HQ in the world rotated laps of Wanneroo Raceway. So those sorts of memories are just, super special. The other really special memory for me I was actually there at Wanneroo Raceway for your typical monthly race meeting, and I used to either, as you say, I'd either be by turn one, say turn three, turn four, or over by turn seven. I remember one day I was over by turn seven, and the message came over, the commentators said, and they said, oh, if anyone would like to have a go at being a commentator, just come up and knock on our door.
Yeah, right.
And I sort of thought about it because I used to play drums in a band. I did some DJ work, and I heard this come over the microphone. I sort of thought, gee, that I've always wanted to do that because I was one of those kids who, when playing footy or cricket, my brother and I, we'd always be commentating the game of footy we were playing. You know, like if we were kicking the footy in the backyard, we'd be commentating it. If we were riding our bicycles down to the shop, we'd be commentating it. You know, we were just those sorts of kids. And I always wanted to, always loved motorsport commentary and always thought, gee, I'd love to have a go at that. I'd just love to have a go at it, even if I was totally useless, which is what turned out to be the case. But, you know, even if a complete klutz, just go and have a go. So anyway, I heard this message and wanted a raceway. And about a few months later, my mum passed away, and so that sort of put everything on the back burner. It sort of took me a while. It took me about a year. And about a year later, I went up the commentary box, and I literally knocked on that door.
Yeah.
And they opened it, and I said, you know, Uber Eats. No, that didn't go down well. And they said, look, you know, what are you here for? I said, well, I wouldn't mind having a go at commentary, you know. And they said, oh, yeah, come in, shut the door behind you. And it was reintroduced themselves. There was Rob Haggerty and the late Rob Janney.
Yeah.
And it was like the two Robs. Easy to remember the name. Can't go wrong here. and I just stood at the back of the room there and sort of watched what was going on the very first show, or the very first race meeting of the season. And I think it was Rob Janney said to me, he said, come a bit closer. So I took half a step forward and he said, no, come a bit closer. He's come and stand up next to us, you know.
Yeah.
And I stood next to them and I noticed there was three microphones on the table and three headsets.
Yeah.
And there was Rob and there was Rob. So there's two. I wonder what the third one would be there for. and Rob Janney said to me, he said, hey, put these on, put the headphones on. He said, and here's the microphone, hold this. And he said, and he pointed up to the timing screen on the corner of the TV, on the TV on the corner of the room, and he said, that's the timing screen. He said, just call out from first down to 10. And I said, and he said, yeah, I just do it as part of the show. And you know, both Robs called the race and they said, now, Sean, our new commentator, Sean, who's in first position and who's in the top 10? I called him out and then, so basically I got through that day and then at the end of the day I said, well, thanks, appreciate the opportunity, fellas, you know, it was really nice. I realised I'm not cut out for it. And they said, what do you mean you're not cut out for it? And you're absolutely ideal. And I said, oh, you're kidding me, you know, you're just, you know, blowing smoke up me. And I said, oh, no, not at all, you know. And they said, well, we'll see you next race meeting. I was like, you're serious? You actually want me to come back? And they said, yeah. And from that day on, it just went from strength to strength. And purely with the guidance of Rob Haggerty and the late Rob Janney, who became a mentor of mine, and I very much miss him. You know, he was... he did so much for me and was a great influence and teacher of. Yeah. He was really passionate not only about the WA Sporting Car Club, about motorsport commentary and motorsport itself. And so that was the story of that. So they kept saying, come back, and I completed my first season and started the second season. It was absolutely magnificent. I couldn't believe my luck. And got to meet Monica Jakovic, worked with her. She was one of the commentators. So it was just magnificent. I couldn't believe how good it was. And it was something I always, always wanted to do. It's one of those amazing things. And I started putting my own time into research and, basically doing research rather than just sort of turning up there and saying, okay, number one is in front of number two, when number seven is in front of number four, and, well, the green car's at the back, as you can see, folks. Yeah. You know, so I try to go a little bit beyond that and know drivers' names and sponsors and a little bit about the machinery. pardon me, that was something that I tried to do and enjoyed doing. And got to the third season, and halfway through the third season, Rob Janney said that he told me that he'd been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, which unfortunately, and 3 days, sorry, 3 months after he was, pardon me, diagnosed, he passed away, and that was just devastating. So I did three seasons with them, and of course, pardon me, after Rob Janney passed away, it sort of all went a little bit haywire there, and I found myself on the outer. But fortunately, pardon me for that. Before Rob Janney passed away, he said to me, he said, Sean, he said, I think, you know, I think a lot of you for coming along and having a go. And he said, I think you've got potential as a commentator. He said, but when I'm not here, meaning Rob, he knew he was going to pass away. He said, you know, not everyone has the same thoughts and wants the best for you. And he did say that, it was going to be difficult for me when he wasn't there, and I sort of thought, "You're kidding me? How? What do you mean?" Sort of thing. I couldn't work it out. But when he ultimately passed away, yeah, I worked out that my future was bleak there. But fortunately, in the meantime, Rob got together with Les Cook and the great Brett Stewart from formerly Tech Performance, three magnificent gentlemen, and. Gave me the opportunity to join the Perth Motorplex as a drag racing commentator, and met Ray Treasure and the team there at the Perth Motorplex, and I've never looked back. I've never been happier.
Yep.
It's funny how I thought when that door at Wanneroo closed, I thought, wow, oh, that's all it was 3 years.
Mm.
Okay. And fortunately, that door closed and multiple doors opened. And being at the Perth Motorplex has been unbelievable, getting to do drag racing commentary, burnout competitions, even car shows, doing Whoop Ass Wednesday, doing Fast Fridays. It is just amazing. And the people I've got to meet there and the fellow commentators, and you spoke about some of the good commentators. Geez, we have some of the best in WA, and we've been producing some of the best motorsport commentators in WA. When you look at the likes of Chad Naylor, Benny Bishop, Matt Nolte, yeah. You know, the list just goes on and on, J-Mac. And now you've got young Christopher Mitchell, who's setting the world on fire. And, of course, Josh Starling stepping up to the plate, Bridget Bell. You know, some of the best commentators in motorsport, probably Australia-wide, if not worldwide, are at the Perth Motorplex. You know, Corey Marriott, really first-class commentators, people that really know what they're talking about. Stu Bond, really good at their job. And it's been an amazing opportunity to get to listen and learn from them. And I'm probably the oldest apprentice they've ever come across. For me, it's just got that passion, that absolute passion for motorsport. And so that's the way the story began for me, for moving from being a spectator into being a motorsport commentator.
I just want to say
a big thank you to Rob Haggerty and Rob Janney from the WA Sporting Car Club.
You know, and you mentioned about the research and that, and you mentioned Monica Jakovic. And Monica, I watched, I've seen, you know, in the pits.
Yep.
At various events, big ass notepad in her hand, wandering around talking to everyone on test and shoot days.
Yes, correct. Yep.
And you know, although this is my personal take on Monica's style is very dry to me.
Yeah.
And you know, but she does her research.
Yes. Yes.
You know, so she's not just sitting there. You know, while I go, okay, you know, maybe she just yelled a bit more like Chris, but this is her style.
Yeah.
You know, like you pair up a Monica with a Chris and you got a dynamic duo.
Yes, absolutely. You know? Yeah.
Like that's what it is. That's what commentating is all about. You have someone who people think maybe is a bit boring.
Yep.
But if they know what they're talking about and they're backed up by someone who can scream and jump around and carry on, who also knows their shit.
Yeah.
It's perfect in commentary.
Yeah, quite true. Yeah.
You know, and that's where, you know, Monica goes out, does the research and everything like that. I think it's a shame we don't see more of it. But, you know, at the same time, we've got to have commentary teams that can work together as well.
Yeah, quite true. Yeah.
You know, if you have two Chris's in a commentary box, I'll tell you what, that'd be so bloody annoying.
Yes, for sure.
You'd be sitting there going,
yeah.
Okay, can someone like dial down the red cordial.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
You know, and you have, and no offense to you, you have two Shauns in the commentary box. You'll be going,
wake up.
Can we have a Chris, please? You know, but that's commentary. That's, you know, there should always be the color commentator. You know, the bright. Yeah, this is fantastic. You know, the old wise one who knows everything. you put those two together.
Yep.
And holy crap.
Yeah, and Neil Crompton, Mark Scaife, and of course, probably Mark Larkham. I mean, you've got the serious one, the one with lots of emotion that has the knowledge. Obviously, you've got the one that's been there, and you've got Mark Larkham, who's the clown prince almost, but knows exactly what he's talking about.
And that's where you get your good teams from, and you can only find those teams by giving people a go.
Well, that's exactly right. Yep. And that's what Rob Janney would always, and Rob Haggerty would also say to me. He'd say, Sean, the most important thing. That's when we're standing in the commentary box. He'd say, Sean, the most important thing is what's going on out there. He said, what's going on inside the four walls of the commentary box is not important.
No.
You know, he said, you know, you had a good day or a bad day or you, whatever, you stubbed your toe in the shower in the morning. It's not important. What's important is what's going on out there. And, you know, basically talking about what's going on out in the racetrack. And, yeah, thoroughly agree with that. And also the diversity of commentary. I think it's, I think it's really important to have a female commentator, if not to have female commentators. Mm. You know, they bring a magnificent dynamic, and I say both sides, both genders bring, their own dynamic. But, yeah, rather than all being about male-dominated coverage or sport, I think it's important to have the female commentators in there as well. And I mean, you look at the likes of Jess. Jess Dane,
who exactly. Was our 50th episode guest.
Indeed, like so knowledgeable. But yeah, you do need your ladies, absolutely. Yep.
Now, so you've already answered by what was your first foray into commentating?
Yeah.
When you went across the motorplex, what was your first deal there? Were you straight into like the big shows or
no? It was quite funny actually. I did a whoop ass Wednesday, so I was very privileged. They looked after me big time. They allowed me to be the third person on the whoop ass Wednesday, who just followed them around and watched what they did, and maybe said a little bit here or there. But the experience was just amazing. So yeah, I started with whoop ass Wednesday. I think probably my first. Of the big shows was probably the Burnout Monster Ball, one of Burnout Boss, for instance, and the start of the season. I did some time on that, which was really, really good, along with Chris and Jack Greenway. And then I think later on in this, basically in my second, in my first season, that's right, J-Mac did start to incorporate me into the main commentary, doing a lot of group threes. And I mean, I must admit, even in my first season, J-Mac on the roster gave me opportunity to do some top door slammers, for instance. I remember calling a John Zappia pass in my first year of commentary, and it was just like, wow, I had to pinch myself. you're right. I did start with Whoop Ass Wednesday, but I was into everything. They just invited me into everything, to the Nationals, you name it, and to have input into that, which was just the dream come true.
Have you done I should know the answer to this, but motivation. Have you done any of the motivations?
Just the once I did work, and that was the very first year. The second... So the first year I was part of motivation.
I was going to say, first year of motivation, that goes back to Richie Hallett's in Nappy's days.
Indeed, yes, that's right, yeah.
No, so first year of you being at the motivation.
I should, that's a better way of correcting it, exactly, yeah. So I did my very first year, and since then I haven't been part of it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. It's, look, to be honest, I think you got the better deal not being a part of it.
Yeah, okay.
get to sit out and enjoy it. And
yeah.
I've watched the guys and girls doing it, and, you know, they're having to put on, 10 T-shirts and heaps of hats and run around in them and do all sorts of crazy stuff. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, just go along and enjoy the day much better.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely it is, yeah. And a great show, Motivation, really good outing. There's so much to see on the track and off the track. You know, the vehicles that turn up, from the collectors and the the unveilings, for instance, magnificent machinery.
Of course, this is motivation, you know, King of Motivation, whatever you want to call it. The big one was the Mighty Boy.
Yes.
Which everyone was up in arms about because it's not a traditional motivation car, so to speak. It's, you know, not a done up Holden or
that's true.
Ford or something like that.
And I know.
Even though like last year's was King Cruiser, but that was people choice.
Yes.
But the judges this year went for the Mighty Boy. But that Mighty Boy was so well put together,
though. Oh, isn't it just? But I think the Mighty Boy, if I'm not mistaken, has an LS engine on board, a Chevy LS engine. So, look, it's part Holden or part Ford. Yep. It's part Holden. The powerhouse under the bonnet is anyway.
Indeed.
But, yeah, tiny little machine. I mean, pardon me, very short wheelbase, quite narrow. But, gee, yeah, it does a magnificent skid. And it's a lot easier to turn around when it goes up the entry or exit chutes, you know, compared to, I think, what's it called, Size Matters, which is a stretch limousine that comes down there and does burnouts every now and then. So, yeah, Mighty Boy, exactly. He had an interesting little outing there at one stage when his brake wasn't working on the way back to the pits. But
everyone's all's talking about it and somehow I missed it. So.
Yeah, all's well that ends well.
Indeed.
For all involved.
I think Richie was in the car at the time.
Oh, I'm not quite sure.
Someone was in the car, I'm pretty sure, from the commentary team.
Gotcha,
so this is another thing you get to stay away from is the dodgy moments.
Yes.
So far, though, in the few years you've been up at Motorplex, do you have a standout memory?
Look, it probably, that's a darn good question. Probably just recently at the, one of the basic ones, this might surprise you, is when we start the main show, which is at 5:30 p.m., you go through a thing called the track blessing and with the national anthem, and actually just standing inside the commentary box listening to the national anthem and realizing that you're about to start the show with Stu Bond. That was very special. Apart from that, look, just being going back to where it all began from, being a spectator and seeing Phil Amatina or Peter Jarrera, or something, might have been actual Damien Harris, who lobbed a 518-kilometre-an-hour pass over 1,000 feet, and to be side-on watching that go past at 518 kilometres an hour from a standing start over 1,000 feet, that is just breathtaking. And that's a memory that you remember. Seeing it go past and looking at the timing boards and seeing 518 kilometres per hour. Oh, yeah. Love it, you know. That's why we love motorsport.
Do you, as a commentator, have any sort of superstitions about, you know, approaching cars from a certain way?
Oh, interesting.
Setting up, you know, your microphone or headset or anything like that in a certain way?
Very interesting. Funny you should say that. Not so much with the vehicles. I will have the headphones on a particular way. So how do I describe this? With a microphone that comes down from the earpiece just in front of your mouth, I like that to be on a particular side. So I don't like that to be on the side of the person I'm communicating with. That's one of the pretty basic sort of things. I like to get there early. Yeah, I don't like running late, which has happened a few times, one thing or another traffic or just, you slept in or something. I like being there nice and early. I like to get in there, settle down, feel at home, and I'm like, have a good breath. Now I'm ready. So a couple of those basic superstitions. But as far as the cars and bikes go, nothing at all. No.
Do you have a favourite category up there? I know this could be a controversial question for some.
Indeed.
Do you have a favourite category up there?
Funnily enough, I do. It's actually the Supercharged Outlaws.
Yep.
I could say Top Door Slammers by all means. Just love the Supercharged Outlaws. A big black belt rotating a blower. You know, the cars are effectively with supercharged Outlaws, shall I say, their cutoff point is to not go faster than 6.5 seconds, but that's still extremely quick. You know, that's the pass of a door slammer that didn't get it exactly perfect. So they're extremely quick. And the appearance of the cars, you know, not only their liveries, but the appearance of them is something special. A wide variety of cars in Supercharged Outlaws. That's really a category I love. Beyond that, yeah, you know, you just keep going upwards and onwards. Having said that, I like the JD's junior dragsters. They're magnificent little single-cylinder machines running on methanol. Over 200 metres, they're faster than a stock standard HSV, and you got kids in them, and I say kids, young, very mature boys and girls, maybe, you know, somewhere between 10 and 17 years of age or 16 years of age, driving a car that is faster than a stock standard HSV. Very impressive. And then your other categories like Super Street, for instance, the sort of cars that I would have driven next to on the way to the track. And to see them out there. And, of course, well, the other thing with Super Street is some of the cars, majority of cars, are road registered. And you look at the Garbellinis, for instance, they drive the cars to and from the track. Even if it's if the racing is the Eastern States, they drive the cars there, do the racing, and drive it home. The epitome of Super Street, but it is look, every category is special, and I love my bikes also. I mean, I guess if I answer that question, I say, oh, Top Fuel, yeah, by all means. But I'm someone who understands that drag racing comes in all different categories, and you can have a couple of Top Fuel cars, yeah, look really good. You know, one gets down there and say 6.5 seconds, one sort of something goes wrong, gets down there at 10 seconds. If you watch two Supercharged Outlaws racing side by side, or two super sedans, and they cross the line within you know, a few feet of the line, that's racing. So it doesn't have to necessarily be the fastest and the loudest, just the best racing and the best prepared, great liveries. So yeah, it's a tough category. Very tough category, but if I could afford to get into a category, it'd probably be Supercharged Outlaws.
If you were able to call a race,
yes,
of any driver,
yep,
any discipline of motorsport,
yep,
dead or alive.
Oh wow.
Who would you want to call in a race?
Gee, I think I'd probably go back to the days of Larry Perkins, Jimmy Richards. So I'm talking about the Australian Touring Car Championship. Going back to those days, your Dick Johnson, John Bow, I suppose even Gricey, Tony Longhurst, those sorts of drivers. Yeah, I'd love to do that that era and that category. I'd also love to be doing today's V8 supercars or supercars, Repco supercars. Love to be doing that. Of course, the other one, it would be really nice to do some Western Nationals finals. That'd be another massive coup. Yeah, so there's many, many things I'd love to do. Having said that, happy to do anything at all. Absolutely anything at all.
You had to pick one.
Oh, you got me there. Okay.
One. That's all right, the key word. Key number is one racer.
Oh, just racer, not category?
One racer in one category.
Okay.
Yep.
One era. Okay. One racer, one category, one era. I really like John Bow, so it'd probably be the Australian Touring Cars with John Bow.
Yep.
The reason I choose John Bow, met him a couple of times, really liked the gentleman, think the world of him, and he was such a tough racer, so hard to overtake. Yes, it'd be John Bow. There's so many others. I mean, you could look at Formula One, for instance. It would be amazing to commentate Max Verstappen and you know, I imagine Daniel Ricciardo when he won Monaco that year to be commentating that one. So, look, I got 100 suggestions, but actually now I think about it, it'd be the win of Daniel Ricciardo at Monaco. If I could commentate that race, gone back in time, and commentate that race, that would be the race.
That race?
Yeah,
John Bauer race.
No, yeah, well, yeah, okay. Yeah,
no, so I'm only giving you one.
I know, and I'm having a dollar each way.
I'm trying to stretch this out.
I know, because there's two horses in the race. I want to put a dollar on that one and a dollar on this one.
No, it's simply one.
Okay, be Daniel Ricciardo, Monaco, that particular victory. Okay. Yeah, you'd have to go with that one. For sure. Yep.
All right.
Sorry, John Bauer. Love you, mate.
Oh, dear. If you had any advice for up-and-coming commentators or anyone that wanted to get into it, what would you say to them and how would you tell them to go about trying to get into commentating?
I definitely recommend it to anyone who loves in motorsport, feels that they might have a good voice. And someone with just genuine passion for motorsport and commentary, I'd recommend it. I'd say definitely start when you're young. You look at the likes of Josh Starling, who's just taken the world by storm, at least taken WA by storm in effectively his first season. You know, he's, I think he's 19 years of age, along with Josh Graveling there from Alice Springs, also about 19 years of age, first-class commentators. And my advice then would be teamwork, and perseverance, and don't get too big. Don't get too big. Don't be afraid to do your lower categories. It's not all about the biggest categories out there, and research, go and speak to the drivers, speak to the teams, but just have a real passion. And as far as getting into it, go and knock on the local car club door and ask if you can have a go. Seriously, go and knock on the local car club door. And it might be something even as simple as a car show. I'm not saying coffee and cars, but a smaller car show, for instance, where if you have a knowledge or you have a passion for it, let's say there's a UK car club that might be based somewhere, for instance, with your Austins and all those sorts of cars, your Morrises and so on. And if you've got a passion for that sort of thing, go and ask the organisers, could you pick up the microphone and go and interview some of the owners of the cars. Something like that, like walk up to an owner sitting next to his car in his fold-up chair and, "G'day, mate, my name's Sean, but, you know, tell us about your car and this sort of thing, tell us about yourself, tell us about your pride and joy and all sort of thing, how long you owned it and all sort of thing." So have that sort of enthusiasm. And also the other thing is the really important thing, when you talk, smile. Whenever you speak, smile, because it'll come out in your voice.
Can you tell when I'm like frowning?
Exactly. Well, you certainly can.
So what are you trying to say? I'm frowning right now.
You certainly can. You know?
Don't know what you're on about, but yeah, no, it definitely does make a difference, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, when I commentate, sometimes I might look like the Cheshire Cat because I'm just loving what I'm seeing, that I want to portray that to those that may not be able to see what I'm seeing. You know, bring the magic and the fun and the enthusiasm and the excitement into it as you see it. And I think there's another thing with commentators is you don't have to necessarily be a former racer or be a current racer. Not at all. I mean, I noticed, like, if you look at cricket commentators, they're all former cricketers. Football commentators, they're all former football commentators. But motorsport...
Some of the best footy commentators, though?
Yep.
Not footy players.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah, you look at Bruce McAvaney played a little bit of amateur football in South Australia, but he's mainly a racing horse racing commentator. Yeah, well, he played some football. Actually, funny, I could keep going about this. Dennis Cometti played football at West Perth. He coached West Perth. He was pretty good, and
you're not talking about like AFL, where you know they've had their bums wiped for
that's true
and all that sort of stuff.
That is true. Yeah,
talking about
that is true, and I could go on with that Dennis Cometti story. A couple of very funny ones about him.
Yeah, no, let's not go there.
No, indeed not. No, but yeah, I'd say always smile when you speak and just love what you're doing, and portray it. You know, speak about it, talk about it, encourage others to love about it, encourage others to love it, and to tell people what you see in it. But yeah. Just don't be afraid to have a go. And look, you'll find, and another thing you'll find, there'll be people who'll tell you you're the worst person. They'll tell you how bad you are and all that sort of thing. But for every one person that will knock you down, there are 10,000 people that will give you the benefit of the doubt and give you a go. And, you know, I've come across maybe three two to three people that have gone out of their way to hold me back from what I'm doing. Now, I'm not saying 30,000 people are on my side, but I am saying for those three people, there's a massive, there's thousands of people that will give you the benefit of the doubt and give you a genuine go.
I have bagged out football commentators. Commentators used to play football a little bit.
Yep.
But I must have to say Carl Langdon, though.
Yeah.
As a commentator. Motorsport Isn't commentator as well.
Isn't he brilliant?
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And back in the 90s and the noughties.
Yes.
At Claremont.
Yes.
Of course, was the Con and Carl show.
Yep, indeed.
And yeah, so I do have to say there is that the few exceptions to the rule, and Carl is one of those people. I know last episode with Chris, I was struggling to remember Carl's name.
Yep.
And I was doing it again just then, so good old Dr. Google,
Carl Langdon,
helped out with reminding me of who his name again.
Yes.
My God, his name's on the tip of the tongue. But
yep. Yeah. But you're right. He wasn't exactly a racer. Probably involved in cars and motorsport. Just that had that love of it, I guess. I'm not sure how he got the opportunity to join Con, but gee, he's a really good speedway commentator, as Carl Langdon. Really good. The excitement and enthusiasm in his voice. But yeah, you don't have to be a former racer. Just absolutely love it. Get out there and do it. And as I say, plenty of people knock you, say, oh, what would you know? The other thing is with commentary is that a lot of the racers who become commentators may not be able to relate to the spectators.
Yeah.
Now, if a spectator becomes a commentator and they take that spectator's point of view and they commentate as a spectator, that is really infectious to the spectators. Now, there are some people who just want to hear stats and figures and all that sort of stuff, and that's where you know, somebody who really knows what they're talking about. But sometimes some of the spectators who are listening, they just want to hear things sound good and sound. They want to hear people that are commentating that sound like they want to be there. They want to hear people, commentating with a smile on their face rather than just going through the motions. They want you to be there and to bring that enthusiasm and excitement of that particular sport to them.
So when are you next behind the mic?
Very good question. Actually, it'll actually be in July, up in Darwin, July the 15th and 16th, and then down in Alice Springs the following week, I think it's July 24th and 25th in Alice Springs. So we've got the Top End Nationals and then the Central Australian Nationals up in July. And after that, it'll be probably have to wait until we get back to Perth Motorplex in September for All Pass Wednesday, which we start on the first Wednesday of September religiously.
And of course, you can be heard every week on the
looking forward to a change.
Our weekly update of motorsport.
Yep. Shane and Sean.
Shane and Sean. we need to think of a good name for that show because we'll get there.
Yes, but exactly.
For now, it could be the weekly dribble.
Exactly.
We're kind of call it. We should call it the weekly oil leak.
Oh, nice! That.
Yep, the weekly oil leak.
Like that. Jeez, you're good with these names.
Yeah, let's go weekly oil leak.
All right. All right.
Well, we're actually going to jump off and record that episode shortly. So
exactly.
I know if you guys pop along, but look, thank you very much for coming and joining and having a chat.
Thank you, Shane.
I think we've asked all our usual questions. I just had to go through my brain and just make sure we've ticked all those boxes that we ask all our guests. And look forward to dribbling crap about motorsport with you every week. And of course, when you're back behind in the commentary booth at Perth Motorplex, and I'm sure we'll see you probably on TV or something with the Nationals and that up in Darwin and
Alice Springs. Looking forward to it. Yeah, exactly. It's going to be great fun. I got to do it last year and do it again this year. It's going to be really good fun.
Fantastic. Well, thank you everyone again for listening. Make sure you get on to behindthesport.net. Check out all the new cool little social features you can do, hot or not, so you can you know, is the AU bumper really hot or not? And anyone who says not is not a true motoring enthusiast, because the front end of the AU, absolutely sexy and hot. And on that note, going to finish the podcast. Stay tuned and back next week.
Bye-bye.
Shane here from Behind the Sport. Thanks for listening to our latest episode. If you don't already follow us, head on over to Facebook and Instagram. Find us on there. Give us a follow. Or visit our website, behindthesport.net. Catch up with the latest motorsport news. Find all of our previous episodes. And, of course, you can leave us comments on those as well. You can also find us on your favourite podcast provider, such as Amazon Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes, and more. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.